All right. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another day of FOSDEM. We're going to get started here with our next talk. We have Pablo from Spain, the founder of PenBot, talking about open source design, the wake-up call for developers. So thank you. Let's have a warm round of applause.
All right. Hello, everyone. Welcome to my amazing talk. on this very great main track. So yes, this is the talk for today, open source design, the wake-up call for developers. Who here is, by the way, a developer? Okay. Not surprised. So yeah, I'm Pablo Ruiz-Muzquiz. I'm CEO and co-founder of PenBot, and this is my 18th FOSDEM. First one was 2006, and I think when you, so it's not 18th in a row, like I had to miss a couple, but when you keep attending FOSDEM for 18 editions, I think there are two things that, there are two perspectives that you are entitled to share. One is climate crisis. There is a change in Brussels, we can feel it. For those of you that were here like in 2012 or even in 2008, there is a sad shift. I miss the harsh winter of Brussels. If you can say something like that, I can say that. But the second perspective is that some things haven't changed in how we build open source. And one of those things is how we treat design in open source, how we treat the user experience. So after 18 editions, I think I can contribute to that conversation. And I'm going to try to convince you about these three ideas. One, that we have been dispossessed of good user experience, of good design in open source. Let's face it, we're not famous. Open source is not famous for having the best design in our software. Then I will try to convince you about how important it is to rethink or think for the first time what is a design contribution. We know what a code contribution is, but what is actually a design contribution and why solving that matters. And then finally, of course, I'm going to deliver this key point about that for me, open source has to have both open source code and open source design. It is when you have both that you can really be proud of speaking about open source. So let's start with the first one, dispossessed. We've been dispossessed. In a way, it's our fault. I think when you come from a scientific and technological background, you might think that from small principles, everything important will eventually emerge, including the interaction with the user. And so I'm here to tell you that good user experience doesn't emerge just because we have a collection of specifications and requirements and, you know, as a solid foundation. It is something that you have to consider from a more cognitive level and then go down. So as long as we think that we can solve design with this specs-driven approach, we won't really have true user experience or really meaningful user experience. And we can, you can think of how we've treated technology, programming languages, different tools to solve different problems. We know how to respect the right approach to the problem. Design is no different. Now, also, I have this feeling that we have downplayed the value of design. And I think in some ways we can consider this a natural consequence of the fact that open source started with developers, not with designers. And so statistically, you're going to find open source developers, not open source designers. And so developers are not required to understand design and many other things. But the fact that you don't understand something sometimes leads you to think that it's not that relevant. At least if you are in this privileged position where you're a developer, you have a lot of important things to consider already. So I think that was that is sad. But I can understand why that happened. And also, let's face it, if you don't have good open source tools to solve some problem, you might want to avoid that problem because you might not be feeling comfortable using proprietary tools to solve something that, even if you feel it's important, you consider it to be problematic to use proprietary design tools. Next, this second idea I want to discuss with you today is why design contributions is something that we have to really consider. For some people, we were like enjoying internet in the late 90s. We saw the emergence of code contributions, you know, version control systems and decentralized version control systems, because suddenly it was not just a license attached to a software that you could just give away with some physical device, like a CD or something like that. You actually, if you wanted to have contributions in open source, you needed to understand that the whole internet at the time, a tiny portion of what is today, of course, should be able to contribute. So we created ways to understand what a code contribution is and how to make that scalable. And one thing that code has that is amazing when you contribute is that the fact that it's so easy to undo a massive commit actually allows you to be bolder. Sometimes the fact that you can do something, you can go wrong, allows you to never go wrong because you're bold and you're right being bold. But that safety net, that fundamental safety net, allows for a lot of developers to actually do crazy stuff just because it is cheap. There's no waste in the undo. Now, in a design contribution, what should that look like? How can we make design be bold? How that makes sense in that rule and workflow around contributions? Because, of course, we want designers to be bold. We want designers to be as bold as we developers are. And then if we're going to solve the problem of what is a proper design contribution, of course, recognition matters. Recognition has always been at the heart, at the core of why we do open source, not necessarily as an egotistical, you know, obsession, but the fact that you can say, you can point to something and say, I did that. It has my name or my nickname or whatever, there's a license choice. How do you do that with design? How can a design practitioner actually go and say, that is my contribution there, and it's obvious for everyone that is a design contribution? So these are questions I have for all of us here. I'm not going to give you answers, but this is to start the conversation. And then finally, this is a core idea that I want to share with you today, of course, is that open source has to have both code and design. Otherwise, it's limited. It's fundamentally limited. You can do open source code and then use proprietary design tools, but that means that your conversation with the user is mediated. It's sponsored by a proprietary tool. Your design data is not yours. Your design decisions are not yours. You have basically outsourced the design agency in your project. And you can say, okay, well, I won't use any design tools. I just use code. But then, of course, you are working with a huge handicap. If it's like, I don't know, if you are coding and you're using LibreOffice Writer, like, yeah, it is a text editor, but that's not the tool that you would use to code, right? So tools matter. Well, this is PenPot. Of course, we are obsessed about all this. This is an open source UI design tool. We think it's beautiful. I don't know, what do you think? I think it's really, really nice. Good UI, good UI. Here you're seeing the usual metaphor, more or less. But it's a mock-up, so it's a bit broken on purpose, where you have, you know, some information to the left, design tokens in that case, and then design components and some designs. And then to the right, you have code. In this case, that would be CSS. This talk is not about PenPot, but this is a way for us to express how we see design and code working alongside. Because after all, and if anyone is interested in understanding why we had to build PenPot, is because we wanted a developer tool that was actually a design tool. So it's kind of a hybrid approach. And this had to be built by open source developers and open source designers. Otherwise, PenPod wouldn't have existed in the first place. So am I saying that developers should learn how to design? Because let's face it, there's a lot of conversations online saying that designers should learn how to code. Lots of tutorials. And of course, no. I'm saying that. I don't think we have to continue to build this solopreneur that can do everything, you know, and commoditize things that are not in their skill set, but they kind of have to know how to do other stuff beyond their core knowledge. I think we should have specialized people in different areas. Also, there is this question. Perhaps what we can do as developers is just use LLMs as a way to design for ourselves, build UIs. You can, in a way, you can brute force your way with LLMs. You can do that. But there's nothing really different from glorified templates and UI kits. That's not designed with a capital D. And LLMs are very good at understanding code, but design has a very cognitive and visual and neocortex approach that not necessarily a written code, can express. Anyone here interested in philosophy of language will understand that you think and you speak, but that's not exactly the same artifact, right? So you can think of when you think that's design and when you write or speak, that is code, and so there are different renditions of a, I don't know, external element, right? So, no. And then, should we boycott proprietary design tools in our teams, okay? Should we have this active resistance, like, okay, I'm in the team, I know they're using these other proprietary design tools, should I actually say, I'm not going to work until you change that proprietary design tool and use whatever other tool, doesn't have to be PenPod. And of course, no, I'm not, I'm sadly, no. because then you are a jerk if you do that. I mean, in the sense that you have to have some empathy for your peers, they are used to some tools. So no boycotting. You can constructively criticize what they're using and perhaps offer some alternatives, but I'm not suggesting that we go a boycott mode. So this is what we can do. This is my constructive proposition. But first, let me drink a bit of water here. By the way, who here was in 2012? This blizzard. Do you remember the blizzard? I was, yeah, Angela, yeah. Wow. But that was the first FOSDEM for someone. They would probably say, what is this? Then, you know, amazing, minus, I don't know, 10. So this is what we can do. Treat design and design practitioners as true allies. I think we all remember the drama between backend and frontend 16 years ago. Frontend is not that serious, development stuff, you know, things like that. Fortunately, we are past that stage. Similarly, I think we have to understand designers and design practitioners as true allies. And that actually means that we have to give them agency. We need to have them as co-founders of open source projects. We don't have to treat designers as the people that we, you know, ask for stuff like, this is what I need. No, they should be proposing or discussing the problem. You don't give them the question and then the reply. You actually allow them to ask the questions and perhaps come up with their own solutions. So that's giving away a lot of power in open source. That's giving away a lot of privilege in open source. But I think if we don't do that, then there will be kind of an outsourced, I don't know, logo creation, population, right? So of course this is not about asking a better logo or can you fix my design, but actually having them really on board from the very beginning if that is possible. And then what that means in terms of how the design can contribute to your project, that means in terms of roadmap, strategy, design contributions, etc. Just rethink it. Don't have that as an afterthought. A good example of this is Blender. Anyone here knows Blender? I hope a lot of people know, yeah. So Blender uses PenPod to design Blender, the Blender UI. Anyone loves here the Blender UI? Yeah. It's an acquired taste, I guess. But what they do is they use Pempo to redesign the UI in Blender. It gets updated nowadays more often than in the past. This is very cool because they live stream how they are rethinking the design of the Blender UI. In this case, they're using design tokens, and it's very fun. If you see the low fidelity there checked, that's a token set. But if they had activated the other one, then there will be values overridden for border radius, color, opacity, and it will look high res final polished result. It's amazing what you can do with design tokens. This looks like low res for having a conversation, kind of wireframing. And then if you activate the other set, it uses the final product. This is very interesting because the conversations you have are simpler, depending on what are you discussing. You don't want to have excessive level of detail because it is distracting. So this is a good example of a good alliance between code and design in the Blender project. Next, I suggest that you explore the liminal space between design and code. That's a wonderful place to be, by the way. And here are some tips. Design systems are a great hybrid framework. Design systems are something that designers borrowed in a way from engineering, also from other design arts like architecture, where you actually define smallest elements like a border radius up to components, dialogues, and even bigger design artifacts. This is good because it gives you a structure, but also they are intentional and they are reusable, and you can export them as libraries that it can be consumed for the people, not only yourself. Now, not all design tools are created equal. When you go to manage huge design systems, there are tools that were born 10 years ago, 15 years ago, and they haven't been able to fully understand what the design system is and how they can give you a design system-oriented design tool. And one of the things that actually makes some design tools better than others for this liminal space between design and code is whether they are favoring imperative design paradigms or declarative and semantic design paradigms. So very, very quickly, the imperative design paradigms is about controlling exactly how everything works, whereas the declarative design paradigm is a rules-based. And that means that I only care about the goal, but not exactly how to get to the goal. We all experience declarative design or language when we go into the street, because the road signs are actually declarative. When you see a stop sign, it is very clear what the intention is. Like, you have to have speed equals zero when you get to the stop sign, but it doesn't say anything about how you should get to that speed equals zero or on what vehicle you should be traversing the street. CSS is a declarative design language. And so for the layouts like Flexbox and Grid CSS, that is a very obvious way to express declarative design. It's about the rules, but not exactly obsessed about how you do that. That doesn't mean that you can only do declarative design if you do web, not at all, but we can borrow concept from CSS. And semantic is about the taxonomies. You saw before the design tokens. That's a draft standard for W3C. I recommend that you look into that. That is a way to express opacity, typographies, color, dimensions, everything, in a way that you can combine them because you can reference one token to another. Like, a border radius could be three times the opacity, and then you can change opacity and have multiple opacity values with the same name, and you basically override those values depending on the set you have activated. And that gives design systems a lot of expressivity. And finally, please do consider something beyond design to code. And this would be more important for a designer audience, that you start designing and then you get to code. You design and you code. That is very old-fashioned. We can go from code to design these days, design to code, design to design, using an open source design tool. A good example of design systems is the KDE. KDE, anyone knows KDE? So KDE uses Pempot to build their design system. It's called Ocean. And later today, in the open source design track, Andy Betts is going to describe, he's going to discuss how they're building their massive design system in KDE using Pempot. So good example there. And finally, shift priorities to non-technical users. I was leaving like the most controversial, or not necessarily the most controversial, but the most commented topic in open source is, what about non-technical users? What about software that is not intended just for ourselves as developers, right? And I think it's this is just my way to encourage you to think outside our own bias. Of course, it's very comforting to be building something for ourselves. But I think it's also very exciting to be able to go outside our own cognitive bias and think of tools and software apps that are not necessarily for ourselves, but for other people that we actually don't. We care about them, but we don't really know them. This is a very neat way to have positive impact through technology that is explicit, that reaches out the global audience. We have all been confronted with people saying, but okay, I love open source, but can you tell me a great open source product that I am using, you know? So I open my eyes, and normally you would say, you go, Firefox, VLC, do you know Blender? Like, very quickly you start going to the very technical. And I think we need to own the whole software stack in the world. Like, we need to own everything, and that includes silly apps that do nice to have things. And that will mean that we'll be making better software for everyone. This is a great example. This is Tenzu. This is an open source project management tool. You don't need to be technical to use. They are also using Benbo2 design. See, very kind of accessible interface, simple to use, but very powerful when you actually use it the right way. So you can do agile project management using open source. That's Tenzu. But then finally, I want to express that fundamentally, you have to be aware, and we are very heavily aware, strongly aware here in this room. I know we are aware of so many things. So many things are actually, for me, it's kind of depressing. I'm aware of so many things that are going wrong that I feel like I just want to go, you know, and hide myself in some dark corner or whatever. But this is one of the ones I would suggest that you prioritize, is being aware is that we keep avoiding good design and open source design. This is a precious territory that we are giving away. And this is the cognitive level. This is the conversation with the user that we're giving away. And if people are here saying, look, I do developer tools. I do database. I do frameworks. That's fine. Your user is a developer. But let's do more than just your user is your developer. Just look at the at that. And when you do that, if you don't have a great user experience, unfortunately, it is a differentiator. People are going to shy away your open source product because they cannot use it, they cannot enjoy it. So they introduced me as Pablo. I'm from Spain. So anyone here from any Mediterranean country? Okay. So. So, we have olive oil in Spain. Really good olive oil in Spain. We say that we have a water and olive oil in our houses. You can just open the tap. And olive oil is a crucial element in our cuisine, in our gastronomy. You know, good olive oil basically is the fabric of our dishes. This is relevant for me because open source was taught to me, you know, like I started open source in 1997. And of course I had to read the recipe metaphor, like recipes, you read it, you can fork it, you can contribute, all that. And I think a lot of open source is olive oil. It just makes the dish feel amazing. It contributes greatly to the experience, but has one issue. It is invisible in many ways. Olive oil isn't in the dish, you can appreciate that. You can ask, what is this olive oil that I'm enjoying? But normally it is hidden. It is a pity because it's so important in how we consider, you know, our gastronomy. So, but we have wine. We also have great wine in Spain. And the good thing about wine is that you put it in front of the person that is having the dish. So at the same time you're having something that gives the dish the right fabric, but then you own the conversation, you have a direct conversation with the user with a particular bottle of wine that they can enjoy and of course marinate, marvelously with olive oil. So I think we need to have both. We need to have code and we need to have design. We need to have the control over what is running, but also we need to have the control over the conversation with the user, no matter who the user is. So that is for today. Thank you very much.